Welcome to Dialogues with Chris Miller. To my right is Tom Shiflett. And with this episode, we're going to bounce around a little bit between the NFL, Major League Baseball's postseason, college football, and of course, fantasy. But what has been popular in the last couple days is the reaction to underachieving teams, most notably the four teams that are 3-3 that would be most concerning: Green Bay, Baltimore Ravens, Tampa Bay Buccaneers,
LA Rams,
and the LA Rams. Those are the four that get the most notoriety. For me, the Baltimore situation is interesting, but I don't think it is concerning yet. They have led by 10 in every single game. I think they have the most potential to rectify those wrongs by a certain amount of increasing maybe the effectiveness of the run game added with the critical turnovers late in game. So I think that's fixable. Also, it's important to note that they're tied for the lead in the division with Cincinnati. I don't think either of those teams really pull away with the 11 remaining games.
Another way you could look at it, they're only a game ahead of the last place Pittsburgh Steelers too. So, I mean, I'm concerned. The AFC North is not good football.
So you are concerned with Baltimore?
Yeah, you can't blow three double-digit leads like that in the fourth quarter and not have any concern whatsoever. It's concerning. Like, because I don't know how it gets fixed, honestly. They signed DeSean Jackson today. What does that fix? That doesn't fix anything.
No, I don't think so.
That doesn't fix anything. They have major problems. And defensively, like, they're learning a new scheme, whatever it is, just not working out. Offensively, the line is just as bad as I thought it was going to be. And they're just not getting the run game going on. And there's just, again, this thing is just a house of cards. Even worse than it was last year. All just built on Lamar. And you saw how it went against the Giants, where he just makes one mistake and it's over. That's it. It's just, they're not as good as I thought they would be, honestly. I thought they would be, you know, kind of cruising around to a one seed here. And I'm just not seeing it from this football team.
Okay, so Tom is concerned.
I am concerned, and
with
Baltimore, person
the most concerned out of the four teams, you would say is Baltimore for you, or
I mean, I'm pretty concerned with a good amount of them. Like I'm pretty concerned with the Packers too.
Well, we're gonna get to the Packers for sure,
but I don't think any of them are. I'm pretty concerned with all of them, honestly. Like, they should be playing better football right now, all of them. Honestly, I'm not really that comfortable with many teams. I think there's only, what, three good football teams I think I can sit here right now and say are good football teams that I don't really have any worries about. Everyone else is, there's some problems here.
There are three teams plus Minnesota. How serious
sure,
would you take them?
I could probably dip pick at them too, but I think Buffalo, Kansas City, and...
And Philly.
And even Philly, I'm still kind of like, you know, I'm not completely sold on them being like juggernauts yet. Like, I appreciate them being 6-0, but they still have some issues that haven't reared their head yet. But the last couple weeks, you can see they can kind of get got. But Buffalo, I mean, that's probably the best team in football that you don't really have any concerns over. Maybe they can run the ball better, but everyone else, they got some problems. There's a lot of just bad football going on right now.
Yeah. And with Tampa Bay, I don't really have...
They're dead.
You think they're dead? They're I don't dead. Have that level of concern.
They just lost to Mitch Trubisky and Kenny Pickett with their six-string corners. They're dead. I'm not interested in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers anymore. That loss, that was alarming. Alarming.
Who threatens them to win the NFC South?
Like, they'll win the South, but who cares? That's not a good division. That's not a good division because, like I feared with the Saints, they're not a very good football team either. Like, the South is, who cares?
Yeah, I was wrong about the Saints, right about Minnesota.
They're just not a good, that's just not a good division. Them and the AFC North are just not a good division of football right now. So if the Bucs, they'll probably win that division pretty easily. But after that, I don't really see anything. Tom Brady does not look good. Line doesn't look good. The defense has been okay, but offensively, they just can't score any points. It's just not good. They had like six like practice squad guys covering Mike Evans, a guy who's probably going to walk into Canton, and he had four targets. That's insane to me.
Yeah.
They couldn't keep Tom Brady upright. They were missing their entire pass rush, essentially. That loss was a bad one. A very bad one. That was the worst loss, I think, from Sunday. I think that's the worst one.
Yeah, it was the most surprising. The spread on that, what was it?
Nine.
I thought it was almost 10.
Nine. It started at 10, went down to 8.5, went to 9 on Sunday morning.
Yeah, weird football for sure.
It's the first time that Brady and Rodgers were both over touchdown favorites, and they both lost on the same day.
That's definitely big news. And with the LA Rams, I think it's possible when they get their center back. Losing Noteboom is a big deal, but
that's just painful to watch. Like rewatching that Carolina game, that was brutal to watch. They didn't do anything well that kind of like instills any confidence in you going forward. Like you kind of felt like, okay, they can roll, they can beat up on the Panthers here, and they can kind of get back going a little bit. And it was still, there was like pulling teeth still. And it's not even the thing where like I was hoping out like, oh, OBJ will come back and they'll kind of make things easier offensively. Like I just don't think that helps everything either. Like they're just not playing good ball at all.
No, with the Rams, it's good to note that San Francisco is 3-3 with just a crazy amount of injuries. I don't know when that's going to get right for them. With the Seahawks, who are probably the biggest surprise of the season, positive surprise.
Yeah.
They may or may not be able to play 60 minutes against that Rams team. So with the Bucs and the Rams, the reason I'm not as concerned is because
they'll win their
I really
division?
Believe they're going to win their division.
Yeah, but what's that, like, who cares, right? I mean, like, because these are teams that we were talking about, like, before the year started, have, like, championship, like, aspirations. Like, they're supposed to win their division. But now I'm like, are they? Because if San Fran gets healthy, like, they're missing three quarters of their defense last weekend. Like, they'll get healthy eventually. They'll figure something out offensively, I guess. I don't know. Shanahan's supposed to be a guru, so I don't know.
It's just a lot of injuries. And by the way, with we're not going to get into it, but with the 49ers, if I'm the York family, the ownership, I would definitely look into what's going on with the training staff, because this is the third year that you are in the top three for injuries or guys on the IR. That's weird to me.
I mean, it's bad. I mean, a lot of it's just bad luck. Again, it was the same thing with, like, Baltimore the past couple of years. People were like, well, they got to fire the training staff or something like that. I mean, there's only so much you can do. Sometimes you just have bad luck. Bad luck.
Could be the fields that they play on.
Yeah.
It could be a number of things. I'm with you. I'm not going to need to get rid
of a lot
the
of
training
stuff.
Staff.
Yeah,
but
there's a lot of other circumstances.
For me, the largest concern is definitely Green Bay.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers has not been able to uplift.
He looks old.
He looks old, and he's not getting the same level of support he has in the last 2 years where he won MVPs. 2020, Green Bay went 13-3.
Devontae Adams.
Rodgers had 4,100 yards passing, 48 touchdowns to 5 interceptions, and then they accumulated 2,100 rushing yards that year. That's an enormous figure considering Rodgers threw for $4,000 plus the 48 to 5.
It's a productive offense.
It's crazy productive.
Yeah.
Further, they passed for 216 first downs and ran for 114. That's 48 touchdowns in the air, 16 touchdowns on the ground. Their turnover margin that season was plus 7.
Yeah.
Which is an indication of a healthy, successful football team.
Yeah.
Moving to 2021, 13-4. Rodgers, 4,300 yards passing, 39 touchdowns to 7 INTs. Running the ball, they had 1,900 yards. So 235 first downs passing, 109 first downs rushing, and 13 touchdowns on the ground. Their turnover margin was truly great at plus 13 last year. Currently, their turnover margin is minus 3.
Yeah, I don't think they've won the turnover differential in any game so far this season. So even when they were winning games before, they went on their little, you know, slump here against the New York teams. Like, the way they were playing football, it wasn't sustainable to winning football. Like, you can't turn over the ball as much as they did. you're not efficient offensively, and expect to win a lot of games. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. And
we're having the same conversation after every game. We got to get Aaron Jones the ball more. Like, you're the offensive coordinator. Like, do it then. You know what I mean? Like, all these people, we got to figure out a way to get them the ball. Just give it to them then.
Yeah, scheme it.
What are we doing?
Make it happen. With what I find important for this season is that they have 70 passing first downs to 42 rushing first downs. Alan Lazard leads the team with 17 of those first downs, which brings up the Davante Adams loss in 2020, where he only played 14 of the 16, 149 targets, 115 receptions, 1,300 yards, 18 touchdowns, and 73 first downs.
Like, I don't care who you think your quarterback is or, like, whatever. Like, losing that kind of production is going to hurt a football team. Like, it was just crazy to think that, like, everything's going to be fine. Davante Adams leaves, so what? You got Aaron Rodgers, arguably the greatest thrower of the football. Everything's going to be okay. You need a guy like that every single Sunday. And you don't have anything to replace it with. You have a bunch of unknown commodities. And it was supposed to be fine. It was like, oh, we'll just lean on the run game more. But they're not even doing that either. How is this offense going to be fixed then?
I would make the argument that the last two seasons, while this offense has been wildly productive.
Understatement.
Aaron Rodgers sets up the running game more so than the running game sets Aaron Rodgers up.
Well, it's a perfect battle. It's a perfect unison of the two. Yeah.
It is. But with the first downs that they lost with Davante Adams' production, which is severe.
Yeah.
A lot of those drives that would go longer and longer and get closer and closer to scoring.
They're punts now.
Are punts now.
Yeah. And their special teams stinks. It's why they lost to San Francisco in December last year. Their special teams still stinks.
Yeah. And to that point, a lot of the production that Jones and Dylan had last year and the year prior were because they were getting
light boxes
on first and second down where they could get 4 to 5 yards a carry, where that's not the case today.
Yeah, what's crazy is that Aaron Rodgers is seeing like single high safeties at like one of the greatest percentages he's ever seen in his entire career. And he doesn't have any guys, I don't know if they're capable of not capable of doing it, but he doesn't trust them to be able to do it. So they're struggling in that capacity too. And then Cobb's going to be out for a little bit. The only guy he literally did trust on the outside is going to be out some time. So I don't know. He's saying all the right things. What is he supposed to say? But I am not too fond of any of these teams right now, really.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's Green Bay because the loss of Davante Adams cannot be
understated enough. Like, or right, overstated. Like, this is a huge deal. You're losing arguably the best receiver in football is not on your team anymore. And you have just a bunch of young kids now who have to try and, like, pick up the slack.
And even if you don't want to get into the number one receiver debate, it was quite clear that it was the best combination, best duo.
One of the most productive like combinations we've ever seen. And that's not there anymore. So, of course, that offense is going to take several steps backwards. But the problem is, like, defensively, they're not at where we thought they would be either. So, again, everything is just not where it's supposed to be.
They have one interception this year.
Yeah.
And they have allotted so much draft capital for that defense to be elite, and they have underperformed.
Yep.
Largely because of, in my opinion, scheme. They're not doing their best job putting their best players in positions to be aggressive.
Yeah.
To take advantage of mismatches.
Well, I think it's too. Like they're on the field a lot more than they're used to being right now because the offense isn't humming, it's not clicking, it's not taking up long sustained drives. There's a lot more punts than they're used to nowadays. They're on the field a lot longer now.
Yeah, Green Bay is still winning time of possession, but that is not as meaningful as it
like
could
if,
be.
If you're going to hold the ball for a while, that's cool, but you have to score points at the end of it. They're having a lot of long drives, like a lot of plays, but they're not scoring to the amount that you would like them to do. It's kind of like what Denver's doing. I'm sure Denver's pretty high up there in time of possession, but they're one of the worst offenses in football. A lot of long drives that get to nothing.
Red zones, yeah.
You can have the ball as long as you want. Cool. You got to get points out of it too. That makes a big difference. Yeah. Just bad football right now.
In the last 30 games where Aaron Rodgers had Davante Adams, Davante Adams had 29 touchdowns and over 157 first downs. Those are monstrous numbers.
How are
you replacing that?
That was always my thing. Like, how do you replace that? I don't care if you think Romeo Doubs is a stud or Christian Watson could be a stud or something like that. They're going to have to be like leaps and bounds better than what you even expect them to be to even have half the production that Davante Adams has by himself.
Even have half the production.
It's tough, and the line is still struggling. Like, just nothing is working for a lot of these football teams right now, which I guess you could kind of spin it in a glass half full kind of way that nobody's playing really good football right now. So it's kind of up for the taking every other spot but Buffalo and Philly, basically. But
let's distill the NFC for a second. I think Philly is the best team record-wise right now, but I'm not sure, and I'm not alone in that, how good that team actually is.
I think, Sunday night was a good indicator of how good they can be. I don't think they played their best game, but they still handled Dallas pretty well. I think we could be quiet with the Cooper Rush stuff now. I think that's over. That was a fun little conversation that shouldn't have even been a conversation. The guy he's a backup quarterback. He didn't do anything spectacular for them to win games. He was fine. That's why they won football games. Yeah, and when they needed him to make plays, he stunk.
Yeah, that loss added... And the three interceptions for Rush gave such relief to everyone in Dallas because there is certainly not going to be any controversy when Dak comes back.
I didn't think there was any, but...
No, yeah. Neither did I, but that's not really how
controversy works. I think Dallas is really good, too. I think Dallas is a really good football team, too.
And I would even posit the Giants as...
Yeah. They're getting into serious category right now.
Even though no one really has belief in Daniel Jones,
no,
what he's been able to do in the fourth quarter through six games has been significantly better than he's ever played.
Coaching makes a giant difference.
And largely without any elite weapons outside of Saquon Barkley.
Yep.
So they're interesting.
Coaching makes a big, big difference for players, man. It's people really do not pay attention to coaching enough. It is a giant deal. Like, this is the same football team that they had last year, and they won four games all of last year with almost the same team.
A lot of ingredients, but Wink Martindale is
coached a hell of a game on Sunday, man.
Changed that identity for that defense.
Yep.
Even though, for me, the best player. Leonard Williams hasn't really played that much this year.
Nope.
So they're going to get that production. They certainly landed a left tackle of the future in Andrew Thomas. Evan Neal, I liked coming out, and I still like his development throughout the first six.
The line's
I think
been
he's
going to
be a nice right tackle. And perhaps they're on to something.
Yeah. Both the New York teams, they're on to something right now.
They're on to something. So... those are NFC East teams.
So I said the Jets before the season. I didn't want to get made fun of, but they're feisty. They could win some games. They're not going to win the AFC East, but they're not going to stink as bad as people think they did.
Yeah, they're
Zach Wilson's been good, man.
They're a spicy bunch.
Spicy, man. Quinnen Williams is one of the best defensive players in football, man. He dominated on Sunday. Yeah, absolutely dominated.
Roll Tide.
He's a beast, man. Jets are fun. Jets are a lot of fun.
Going more deeply into the NFC, I like Minnesota in a way that I think they're going to get at least 12 wins this season, but I don't know how far they could go in playoff football January to February. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they still haven't played a complete game of football yet, so it'll be exciting to see. Like you're wanting more because we haven't really seen them close a ball game out, and we really haven't seen them start a ball game really fast. There's either weeks where they're down and they have to fight violently to come back in the fourth quarter, or they stink halfway through, or they go in really hot and then in the half they just blow a game. Like that Miami game, they kind of just played with their food the whole time. They didn't really close that ball game out last week. That game was a lot closer than it should have been. Their defense dominated Teddy Bridgewater, and it was still almost a one possession game towards the end.
Yeah. And then there are the three Super Bowl winning quarterbacks lurking at 500. maybe one of those three can, I don't know which one, by the way, can right the ship and make them a threat to those teams, because I don't know how big of a difference, let's say Philly is the high watermark in the NFC.
Yeah.
From them to, you know, Tampa, Green Bay, and the Rams playing at their best football.
I haven't even seen that yet. Right, so we haven't. Know.
But I'm saying that it's possible that one out of those three can make it work. I think that's a fair fraction to go with.
Maybe. Yeah, I think probably San Fran is probably, I think they're the best bet once they get healthy defensively to match up with Philly's offense. I think that's probably your best bet.
Yeah, that could be. I hope they find, when Trent Williams comes back, I think that offense is going to look different. When
Jimmy
they can
G's
get some production from one of their young running backs, maybe. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of maybes when you're talking about the NFC. AFC is not really that different outside of the Bills and the Chiefs. I have my doubts about Cincinnati. I have my doubts with Baltimore. I have my doubts with Miami, with New England, with the Jets.
I don't know. I think the only doubt you have is who's going to play quarterback the rest of the year for New England. But defensively, they figured stuff out, and they're back to just running the rock again and being really physical again, which I didn't think was going to happen with all the changes they had in their line. But they were really, really physical on Sunday. Like, they dominated that game in Cleveland. That was a big win. They got something going on. Like, the AFC East has got some good football going on right now. I can't say the same for the North. But the East has got something going on. In the West, like, the Chargers, are you that impressed with what they did last night? I'm not.
No. Not impressed. I think it's good that they're 4-2 without the services of Keenan Allen, who definitely gets them downs and
I think
is a safety blanket for Herbert. I don't know. Rashawn Slater thing was a really big deal.
I think after watching last night, I think I'm good on the Chargers. I think that just kind of reaffirmed that I'm good on them. Like, I'm fine with them. I'm fine with the AFC West, honestly, besides Kansas City. Everyone else, I'm not interested. They don't move the needle for me at all. Denver's, they're toast. Whatever they had that first quarter looked like, if they could sustain this, maybe we're talking about something, but it was absolutely dreadful after the first quarter. So I don't know. Maybe it was the script was good. Then afterwards, Nathaniel Hackett got into calling plays and was bad, but if they could just channel that first quarter again. But yeah, the AFC West is not as good as people thought it was going to be.
Oh, most definitely.
It's just Kansas City, and that's it. I like the AFC is... Yeah, there's a lot of question marks. And, I mean, both these conferences, there's a lot of question marks with a lot of these football teams. And I guess, again, if you get back to the, you know, glass half full, everyone's kind of got problems. So whichever one of us figures it out first, we'll be fine. So I don't know. It's kind of what Cincinnati did last year. They stumbled around. They looked bad some weeks. They looked dreadful weeks. And then they put a month together, and they were in the Super Bowl. So I don't know. I don't want to kill most of these teams off, but some of them barely have a pulse, honestly. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah. From last night's game, what I found to be most interesting is the potential for this theory to come true in the next 5 years. Maybe it could be true already, but it's great to have a number one corner. In Surtain, we got to see that. For Denver, he's a total stud, top five already.
One of the best in the league already, yeah.
Yeah. But the difference from your number one corner to your number two corner, that might be a good investment for successful teams moving forward, is if you do have a number one corner, it's paramount to protect him and get him more targets and potentially interceptions with the play of corner number two and even corner number three, where let's say Surtain will grade at a 95, right? If the other corner is at an 85, that's good enough to displace some of those preying and targeting on him
his first career start last night. It was a little rough, but you know, he's physical. I mean, he is a physical corner, so I think he'll only get better. So, I mean, that defense is really good. That's what makes me so mad about watching Denver, man. That defense is so good. It's already one of the best in football. And it just, it's disgusting to watch them play offensively. So that defense is just about worthless because they're not going to play consequential football with that defense. That defense is not going to play consequential football because that offense is so bad. It's just, it's garbage. And it's just so frustrating to watch.
Yeah, wasted.
It's wasted. Like, it's wasted. That defense is so good, man. And I don't know what they do. They're done. They're done. Raiders, they don't have a chance. They're done. As I figured, I wasn't that moved by them either. The Chargers is like, yeah, they're 4-2, but does it look like they're 4-2? Watching them on Sundays, does it feel like they're a 4-2 football team?
I'm biased because I love Justin Herbert.
Me too. I'm right there. I love Justin Herbert, but I am not moved by this football team. It does not feel like they're a 4-2 football team. Herbert just didn't look sharp last night again. He had some brilliance there for a little bit, but like once the game went on, it looked like that injury's really bothering him. That line was, they were under siege all night. He had no time. They still can't get the run game going. Again, like last week was like they figured things out. I think it was more an indictment on how bad Cleveland's run defense is. And then Ramondre Stevenson just picked off where Eckler left off. Like they don't stop the run. They can't run. This is the problem with LA before the season started. And it's still just mounting its head.
Yeah, but when Herbert had to sort of push it 10 out of 10 last night late in the game, rolls left, gets the 9-yard gain, set the field goal in overtime and wins the game.
Yeah, I mean, if that guy, if the Gunner doesn't bump into Washington there, do they really move into position? We probably have a tie.
Oh, it's probably a tie.
We probably have a tie. Yeah. That's what I mean, like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm glad they're 4-2, cool. It just doesn't feel like a team that I needed to worry about and take seriously.
They're on my radar. I understand what you're saying, but they're definitely on
my radar.
Well,
you have Herbert, so they, yeah, I'm still going to be, you know, they still have a chance because you have Justin Herbert, but I don't know. How far is that going to go?
Getting Bosa back, Jackson playing more snaps, getting comfortable. I don't know. I think there's something there with them.
Could be. The head coach has got to go, though. Brandon Staley is a nightmare. Him and Nathaniel Hackett, what a coaching expedition.
Yeah,
Hackett,
I support.
Was.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
Moving to good news in the NFL, or a story that I found to be interesting, is the Tyreek Hill on pace to break Calvin Johnson's 2012 monstrous season. It's important to note that that was done in 16 games, whereas Tyreek's accomplishment will probably occur in 17. That being said, here are Calvin's numbers that turned him into Megatron if he wasn't already Megatron at this point. 204 targets, 122 receptions, 1,964 yards. Only 5 touchdowns, which is interesting. But the 123 yards per game is pretty hard to touch. Tyreek threw 6 games in 2022, 65 targets, which is on pace, 50 receptions, which is on pace, 701 yards, which translates to 117 yards per game, and currently at 2 touchdowns. So what's interesting to me about this is in 2012, when Calvin Johnson got the record for most receiving yards, Matthew Stafford threw for 4,900 yards and was clearly looking for Megatron,
yeah,
number 81, almost every single play is the first read.
Yeah.
In the Miami Dolphins situation with Tyreek, not only have they been battling now 3 quarterbacks getting him the ball, but his target share is smaller because of Jalen Waddle and even Mike Gesicki. Where Calvin Johnson didn't have any of that kind of threat during that time. So it would be tremendous if Tyreek Hill does that this season.
Yeah.
And I expect once Tua, who is expected to play
Sunday, yeah, he'll be back Sunday night against the Steelers.
Yeah, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
What can be done with Tyreek Tua and Jaylen Waddle as well. I like this story because it does a good job of building drama where potentially there is no drama. And I think that's a success story for the NFL.
Well, him potentially breaking his record? Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't think he does it. I don't think that happens. I think the quarterback plays could be too inconsistent all year, honestly. Because they come to a point now where, like, it feels like Tua is going to miss a couple games again still. Like, I feel like that's just going to happen. And they're going to have Teddy Bridgewater come in there, and that hasn't been any good, obviously. That's why he's a backup quarterback in the league. So I don't know. I think he probably – but like you said, like the offense isn't really one of those things where it's just centered around Tyreek. So they'd like to move the ball around to other guys. They're starting to get Gesicki more involved the past 2 or 3 weeks. So he's only going to get more involved as this goes on. So like you said, the target share is probably not going to be even remotely close where it needs to be for him to break this record. But, I mean, he is a home run threat, unlike the kind of like Calvin was. Tyreek can kind of just take a 5 yard out and make it, you know, 75 yards, 80 yards quick. That's what a lot of his yards have kind of been this year, because they haven't really drove the ball down the field because they haven't had a consistent quarterback who could do it yet this year. It looked like Tua was going to start to do it. Then, you know, his brain turned to scrambled eggs and he's been in concussion protocol for like 3 weeks. So apparently he's healthy now. So I'm happy to see him back, because then I can get back onto really believing in the Miami Dolphins again.
Yeah. That defense has not been as good as it's been the last 2 years.
They've been on the field a lot.
Yeah.
They've been on the field a lot.
That is like, definitely true.
They were on the field so long Sunday against Minnesota. So long. And that game against Cincinnati, too, they were on the field all night. It was bad. So maybe if they get the offense going, the defense could be a little more rested, and they give it. Because like, they still haven't even got Byron Jones back. Xavier Howard's been in and out, in and out, in and out. So they got some nagging injuries they're dealing with, but I still really like Miami a lot.
To add to this storyline, I don't know if there's ever been a wide receiver who fit the prototype glove more fully than Calvin Johnson did coming out of Georgia Tech. It was remarkable, his speed-size combination.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've ever seen that kind of athlete. I mean, Julio Jones comes to mind, but Calvin Johnson was a bigger guy than Julio.
Yeah, 6'5", ran like a 4.34 or something like that. Yeah,
the story for Calvin Johnson, which I love, he ran a 4.3 at the combine in another dude's cleats.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That is crazy stuff.
Yeah, we'll never see another Calvin Johnson again.
Probably not, but I'll argue this too. You'll never see a Tyreek Hill again either.
No, I think you're probably
5'7".
I'm about to say you'll probably get closer sub to
four,
another Tyreek.
4.23 kind of speed.
But you'll probably get like a player who's closer to the build of Tyreek than you would a Calvin Johnson, honestly.
Yeah, I just like the story where
the
prototype, clear as day, may lose that record to a guy.
I don't think he does.
It's possible, though.
It's very possible. This is a year where, you know, he's on pace to actually do it. So I'd be stoked if he did it. It would kind of like reaffirm the signing, and like it was worth him, because a lot of people, why would he go to the Dolphins? They're not going to utilize him, and he's on pace to break Calvin Johnson's record. So, I mean, Miami Daniel knows what he's doing. He's struggled a little bit the past couple of days, but you need a quarterback to kind of make that offense go. He's starting to learn that. So once Tua gets back, they should be back in going back to the trajectory that they were. After that big Baltimore win, you were thinking like, okay, this could be a juggernaut offensively. Now they're not looking too hot, but they'll figure it out. They got plenty of time.
Yeah, that for me, there's no rookie head coach in the last 5-10 years who has had to face a hotter room in answering questions to the press than Daniel has.
Yeah, the concussion protocol thing didn't help him at all.
No, I think he's navigated that relatively well.
Yeah, probably as well as he could. Yeah. I mean, that's 3-3 right now. It could be a whole lot worse for him. So I think they're in a pretty good spot right now.
Yeah. Moving to fantasy football and tactics to get yourself to the playoffs. The trade deadline is coming up in certain leagues. Mine is at the beginning of November.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about everyone else's formats, but it's soon.
I have
soon.
No idea when mines are. I have no idea.
It's soon for a lot of leagues. And I thought it was important to bring up sort of strategies where there are guys that under no circumstance can you trade. For me, that would be Josh Allen, yeah. Of course, Lamar Jackson, Stephon Diggs, Patrick Mahomes, and Justin Jefferson. Combine that with Kelsey's ability at tight end. But outside of that, I think you can get creative with guys like Cooper Kupp and Christian McCaffrey.
I don't know if I'd get rid of Cooper Kupp. Is that target share he gets?
I think it's on its way down.
I don't know. Maybe not.
I think Allen Robinson being able to creep into that 6 to 8 targets a game
That's not enough either. Like, forget Allen Robinson. Like, 6, like, that's not enough. They gotta figure that out. That's not enough.
Would you try to trade? These are situations where teams were fantasy managers have maybe one great player, maybe two. If you have more than two great players, then you're not really trading.
Plus, like, fantasy scoring is down for like the most it's been in like 8 years. So, I mean, it's tough sledding for a lot of people right now. Scoring is down all across the league. So it's hard. It's really hard. There's only a couple of guys that are producing at a high, high level like every single week. It's hard out here. So I don't even know if you can. There's a lot of people who can think that they can make the right trade right now to fix something where it's like, are you even going to get even remotely close to value for trading a guy like Cooper Kupp without like scoring is going this year for everybody? Like if you want to trade Jonathan Taylor, because I mean, it's been a disaster if you got him first or second in your leagues, but like, are you legitimately going to get any value for him if he does turn it around?
For Jonathan Taylor?
There's like two good running backs right now, fantasy-wise.
Yeah, with Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Nick Chubb.
I mean, Christian McCaffrey's... I mean, like, Ramondre Stevenson's a guy, like, if you were lucky enough to pick him off, like, waivers like I was, like, that's a guy who's producing every single week, but everyone else is just a dart throw.
Yeah, some people like what they've seen from Josh Jacobs, Austin Eckler, and Leonard Fournette. Yeah, out of the running back group, the only guy I don't really want to trade is Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
I think everyone else, you could maybe get a good return on value. That being said, like 2 to 3 roster spots being filled. When it comes to Nick Chubb, I would listen to potential deals because my estimation of that situation, whenever Deshaun Watson comes back, is they will probably want to see more throws from Watson than sort of running the rock as often as they have thus far.
I don't know. I think Stefanski's a run the rock kind of guy. I think they'll probably throw the ball more than they do with Jacoby, sure. I don't know if it's going to be a thing where like his volume is going to go down that much. I don't know, it should go up more now once the season starts really going. Because they're kind of doing this thing now where they're not giving him that many carries. And once the season goes on, then he can really be the workhorse. At least that's what Stefanski has been saying. They've been talking about that the past 2 years, and it hasn't happened. But maybe this is the year that changes. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard. Like, I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine trading like the guys that are actually like consistently producing like every single week compared to just about every other player and hope that I get back something in return. I don't know. This is one of those years. It's hard to imagine that you're getting value for half these guys. Because there's a lot of weeks dudes are getting you like single digits and they had to be in your starting lineup. And it's absolutely brutal.
It is. For my experience, the last couple years, I have made big trades near the deadline because forecasting for the current team, it wasn't going to be enough to get to or win a championship.
Oh yeah, I'm a big trade deadline guy. It's just right now this year, I don't know who's worth it.
For me last year, I traded AJ Brown and DeAndre Hopkins. I'm trying to remember the running back. Relatively productive, but definitely peaked. And I got Jonathan Taylor before he absolutely erupted to walk me into a championship.
Right.
So it's possible for fantasy teams to get better.
Yeah.
During this period, because after the deadline, that's tough sledding.
Yeah.
It is. Especially you look at the injuries, even at the wide receiver position with Marquise Brown going down. That was a nice flex for certain teams that have probably gotten a winning record. And now they have
that situation. Yeah, but if you're smart enough, you got Robbie Anderson now. If you're smart enough, you got Robbie Anderson. You ripped him off somebody, or somebody was like, he's not doing anything with Baker Mayfield. You might be sitting out there. Grab him up, because he's going to get into that whatever Marquise Brown role was. He's going to be in that small role because DeAndre Hopkins comes back Thursday. So that target share is going to just go all the way to DeAndre again.
Yeah. For me, my tactic is waiting for, over the next 2 weeks, Dak Prescott to flourish.
Sitting on all my benches. Plus, I just need a quarterback.
The hopefully big production from Gabe Davis or George Pickens, although I don't know now because Pickett is out with concussion protocol.
He should be cleared by Sunday night.
But trying to figure out a way to get my hands on either Kelce or Mark Andrews, because outside of those two, it's very bleak.
Yeah.
Every week for the tight end position.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Every position, it's tough sledding. Like, honestly, it's rough. It's been one of the roughest fantasy seasons I can remember. There's like no guarantees in your lineup, like besides like four players now. It used to be every team at least had one guy they could lean on every single week. Now it's like, it's a dart throw every Sunday. It's miserable. This is my last season playing fantasy football.
Really?
I didn't even want to play this year. We were supposed to get mobile betting before the football season started, and I wouldn't have even worried about fantasy football. But they're still dragging their feet on it. It's not going to be until like end of November. So I ended up doing fantasy football. I'm not really, my heart's not all the way in it. You know what I mean? Both my teams stink. I don't really care.
That is upsetting.
I guess. Mean, we had a good run, but once I get into actual just legalized gambling, I think I'll just be dead with fantasy football.
Yeah, that is an unfortunate reality for some fans out there. Transitioning from fantasy football to the stellar state of college football, the rankings are number one, Georgia, number two, Ohio State, number three, Tennessee, number four, Michigan, number five, Clemson. It's important to note that those teams are undefeated, and of those five, only Clemson really has the luxury of playing no one, in my opinion, who can play back. They play Syracuse, Notre Dame, Louisville, Miami, and then South Carolina to finish the season. So I'm confident out of those five teams,
Clemson
will
fine.
Go undefeated and position themselves in the college football playoff.
Yep.
So that's
just as
Clemson.
I thought would happen. That defense, and if DJ Uiagalelei like just figured out just a little bit, which he has, they're going to be a damn good football team, and that's what it's been.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice that Pittsburgh won the ACC last year, but that was
good work, Kenny.
Was brief. To the games that dictate the top five and the college football playoff before the championships that follow, on November 5th, Tennessee plays Georgia. That will decide.
Where's that at?
I think it's at Georgia.
It'd be a good game either way. Tennessee can really score the ball, man.
Absolutely.
That was a good, like, Hinton Hooker should be ready to travel to New York now at the end of the year. That was a good Heisman performance for him on Saturday. Kind of solidified that. He's really good on Saturday.
He also definitely benefited from not having CJ Stroud play this weekend either.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, he just beat Alabama at home. Like, probably the biggest game since Florida was in town at like 98 in Knoxville. It's a big deal. Huge deal.
Enormous deal. Yeah, they dropped 49 on Nick Saban.
Yeah.
Which has not happened.
Hooker was awesome.
Regular
man.
Season SEC.
He was awesome. That was awesome to watch.
Yeah, I'm just double checking, making sure that game is at Georgia between Tennessee, which is going to be outstanding.
Yeah, it'll be awesome either way.
Yeah, it's
in Georgia.
Tennessee at Georgia on the 5th. I don't know if that's going to get bumped to a night game or 3:30.
You would imagine it probably would, right? That seems like that would be a late night CBS game, where both these teams are playing. As long as they, you know, Tennessee doesn't hit a hiccup here before the game, drop one for some reason out of nowhere. You never know.
Yeah, you certainly don't in college football.
College football is, I don't know how people gamble on it every Saturday. It is a crapshoot every single week. I have no idea. I really don't. You have no clue. You have no idea what's going to happen on a play-to-play basis with half of these teams, let alone a result of the game. You have no idea.
Correct.
I also throw your money out the window.
Yeah. Moving to the 12th, where Ole Miss takes on Bama in Tuscaloosa.
Is Ole Miss really the seventh best team in the country?
Well, that's what we're going to find out. I don't know if their defense is capable of holding anyone, but that offense and
Lane
Kiffin knows historically
how to do it. Yeah.
They have been able to put together. I mean, Lane Kiffin is very creative when it comes to offense and scheme. So
it's one of the best in the
business.
We
will definitely see the results of that. Also on the 12th of November, number 8, TCU taking on Texas, who, although they are a two-loss team, they're probably in the mix for best two-loss team in the country.
Yeah, I think you made that conversation. As long as Clint Ewers is in the lineup, yeah, absolutely. Bojan Robinson.
The caveat with TCU is I don't think anyone takes the Big 12 seriously enough to anoint anyone outside of Oklahoma and Texas a college football playoff bid.
Oklahoma's not very good.
No, I'm saying just historically.
Yeah.
TCU can go undefeated and get squeezed out by a one-loss Alabama team, a one-loss Ohio State team. Even a one-loss USC, I think, is more tantalizing than a undefeated TCU. They're going to play in a major bowl, but I don't think they're really in the mix.
TCU's fun to watch.
Then on the 19th of November, USC at UCLA. That is huge for the Pac-12, of course. And then finally, the 26th of November, when Ohio State and Michigan face off.
It's going to be a physical game. That's going to be a Sunday game. That's going to be physical, man. Ohio State, again, like, they are not flashy, but God damn, that is a physical football team. A lot of people are bored by them, but they maul people on both sides of the football in the trenches. Like, that is a dominant, dominant team, man. Michigan, too. They're tough and they're nasty in the trenches. So that'll be a really fun, like, low-scoring game. I don't know how fun that'll be for most college football fans, but that's going to feel like an NFL Sunday game.
I mean, there's definitely a lot of talent, NFL talent, on the field. A number to monitor during that game is 7.6. 7.6 was the yards per carry Michigan averaged against Ohio State's defense. That forced Ryan Day to get a new defensive coordinator, and that has been their focus largely all season, is practicing for that game. It's interesting because although Michigan is without, of course, Aiden Hutchinson, who left for the NFL, I think that defense is probably a hair better, and that running game looks better to me.
Yeah.
So that is going to be a very, very interesting game on the 26th in college football.
Hell yeah. I'm excited for that.
So we have a November that is peppered every weekend with wildly significant games in the college football playoff. Of the five undefeated and number six, Alabama, one loss, and USC, one loss, even Ole Miss, TCU, UCLA, who do you feel is going to make that final four?
I think Alabama's still going to figure out a way to get in the final four. Clemson's definitely going to get in the final four. Georgia. I'm not sure who the third one, the fourth, the final one I'm going to put in there is. I don't know. It's tough. I guess it would be Ohio State. Yeah, Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia. That's probably what it's going to end up as, I feel like. That feels like that's what's going to happen. So.
Yeah. The only
I don't know about Alabama, though. This team seems very, like, it doesn't feel like an Alabama team. Like, watching them on Saturday and then watching them even in the Texas game, it just didn't feel like a Nick Saban Alabama team. Just super undisciplined. They just don't seem like they have, like the superior dude at every single spot like they usually do. This just doesn't feel like the Alabama that we're used to right now.
Yeah, outside of Will Anderson Jr. and Bryce Young, that is not as talented of a group.
Like, they have guys, but yeah, it's not like...
Not standouts.
No. It feels like they are vulnerable. It doesn't feel like they are just a juggernaut every single Saturday when they step on the field. So I don't know. Maybe they aren't going to get into that final four. I don't know how to feel about them. But it's hard to go against Saban. That's how it felt on Saturday. I was like... They're 9 against Tennessee. Sure, that feels like one of those Saban games where he's just going to drop the hammer on them because he is Nick Saban, and they gave up 49 points and they just, what was it, 18 penalties or something like that again? Like, they broke a record that they set against Texas. Like, this is just not an Alabama team we're used to seeing.
Yeah, part of the success model that has been Nick Saban over the course of his tenure at Alabama is that you're going to lose players who are juniors or redshirt sophomores to the NFL draft every year.
Yeah, but you're going to have a guy who's potentially better just sitting behind that guy.
Correct.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you're going to lose an assistant coach every single year to either the NFL or to another college program. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
With that rate of sort of exit when it comes to Saban and...
It's a lot of turnover every year.
It's a lot of turnover. And it's hard to plug and play with new guys, especially coaching, almost every year.
Yeah.
So there is something to that you know, unparalleled success in college football where, yeah, you're the target every week for most of these teams.
Hell yeah.
And you're going to lose players who would probably play 3 to 4 years in college, but since they're at Alabama and they get exposure early, if they get playing time, they're gone.
Yeah.
3 years of eligibility, they're gone.
Yep.
In the first round, probably.
Yeah.
So that is one of the, I guess, things working against Nick Saban. But for me, I love the idea that Tennessee can just throw a hand grenade into the college football playoff.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I would love to see. That'd be great for college football if Tennessee is like back. You know what
That'd
I mean?
Be
it'd
awesome.
Be awesome.
That'd
like,
be awesome.
Be awesome.
They were dead.
Yeah.
Two years ago, it was like Jerry no one's going to take that job.
And Derek Dooley and all these coaches they went through that were just absolutely terrible. It was sad. They couldn't even keep recruits in Tennessee. You know what I mean? Like, it was terrible. But Tennessee feels like it's back finally, which is good for college football. USC feels like it's back. Like, this is good stuff here. Texas feels like it's starting to come back. This is good stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely in good hands. Moving to Major League Baseball and the postseason, what we talked about in a previous episode.
About the Padres, baby.
Right, but also the vulnerability of 100-plus win teams historically.
Not the Astros.
Right. So all but one 100-plus win team.
I think it just comes down, I think I've been thinking about this. It's just the fact that you didn't really have to play a lot of consequential baseball for a good amount of time. Like if you're the Dodgers, they were up 30-some games all year. They just like cruised. They didn't really have to play any like white-knuckle baseball. And then at the disadvantage of being a one seed is you're just sitting back waiting for a team who gets rhythm, timing, and confidence that comes right in and plays you with in a game that's all about rhythm and timing. It's a tough, like, I wouldn't want to be a one seed in baseball, honestly. It's one of those, like, rust versus rest kind of things, debates, but I think that's really a problem in baseball. Going back, like, the one seeds have really had a lot of, like, trouble advancing in the postseason the past couple of years. You got the wild card format now, going right into, like, a hot team, swinging a hot bat like the Padres are. The starting pitching's pitching well, like, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Absolutely screwed.
In this instance for 2022, the Mets had to play best of three and essentially played 27 outs to predict their future moving forward.
Yep.
While also winning over 100 games. That, you know, I don't really have an opinion on if that's good or bad, but...
I mean, they had the rotation for it. That was the thing all year.
They totally did.
It didn't matter. They had Scherzer and DeGrom. It should have been fine. You know what? That's all you heard about all year.
That's all you heard about all year.
I told you, the Mets are the Mets. Nobody cares. Until they do something different, they're the Mets. Yeah. That's exactly what they did.
And then with the Dodgers and the Braves, they had, at a minimum, 27 outs to figure things out against teams that...
Philly has been playing... like for their lives since the All-Star break. It has that feel of the Braves last year where they were scratching, clawing. As soon as Girardi got fired, they were playing like playoff baseball every day just to climb back to get into a wild card spot. And then they're fighting off the Padres. They're battling with the Braves or whatever and the Brewers for like 2 months. They've been playing consequential baseball for 3 months almost.
Yeah. I mean,
and Bryce is starting to become Bryce Harper again.
Which is great for baseball.
Hell yeah. It's terrifying for the rest of the National League and everything, but Bryce is starting to look like Bryce.
Yeah, that's...
Schwarber's not even swinging a bat yet either?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's going to be a great series.
Oh yeah.
But for me, it brings up a question where it's obvious that analytics work during 162 in the regular season because the sample size is so large where... the math and the insight that you get from it is meaningful.
Yeah.
But is there a limitation to applying analytics to such a brief series where it could be one in 18 innings? Is there a limitation to applying that kind of synthesis, for lack of a better word, when perhaps it should be treated in more of an old school fashion where my best guy is going to play for as long as he can and for as long as I think he's not a danger to himself and the team.
Perfect example is today, Tito going not Shane Bieber today, like do or die. Like I get it, like you don't want him to pitch and then you move on, then you have to deal with it. Like that, you don't have to worry about that. You have to get through this game first. I can't believe he didn't go Bieber today. Honestly. And then their season is over because of it. But I think there's got to be a balance of it. Like, as with any sport, with any, like, there has to be, like, you can't just be one of those people who doesn't pay attention to analytics at all.
Like, you have to be able to, definitely have to,
there has to be a balance of both. Like, there's a lot of people now who are leaning too much towards just analytical and they're kind of not sticking with feel and just your gut like an old school manager or a coach would. Like, you got to have a fine line of both. You always have to. In any sport, you definitely have to. But it feels like baseball, you definitely have to have more of that old school gut feeling. Like, just ride your best guy, see what happens the next day.
In the postseason.
Yes.
Yeah. I.
And the regular season, I get it. It's a haul, and yeah. These are giant investments now, and you got to rest dudes. And if a guy's got a no-hitter going in the seventh, you're like, don't care, I'm taking you out. I need your arm in October. But it gets to the point now where, like, You just pitch them until their arm falls off because you don't know if you're going to make it to tomorrow in the postseason. You have to go with your best guys at every single chance possible. Honestly, you cannot leave any stone unturned in baseball. You can't.
Yeah,
the margin of error is so thin, regardless of how good your team is compared to the other one. The margin of error is so thin in baseball. You cannot leave any stone unturned.
Especially when it's the management of starting pitching to bullpen.
Even if your starter doesn't have it early and you got a guy sitting there that, you know, hasn't pitched in like 2 days or something like that, get him in there early. You have no choice. Like, you could be out in a couple innings. You could be dead. You got to do everything you can to keep your season alive.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. I think of...
I just cannot believe Francona did not go Beaver today. He pitched. He was so great so far in this postseason with all the calls he was making, the way he had them playing. I just thought it was insane for him not to go Beaver.
Yeah, it's important.
It was short-sighted.
It's important to note that Beaver pitched Stanton and Judge very well in this series and all year, whereas you can make a case that they lost today because Stanton caught, you know, a very hittable ball and took a yard.
I mean, you looked at all the numbers against him coming in for the Yankees lineup. Like, they all were hitting very well against him. Like, I just didn't think that was the guy to keep your season alive on the road. I just didn't see it. I don't know.
No.
I don't know. No. So, hey, Guardians had a hell of a year. I really thought they had that series. I'm not going to lie. I thought they had that series. But, you know, it looks like Judge has figured it out at the plate. He was dreadful to begin. We're like, this guy stinks. What's the deal? He's really starting to hit the ball now. So maybe the Yankees do have a pulse. Cole pitched well the other night. Eliminator. He looks
so
like an ace.
Well,
so if they get that going forward, Nestor was really good today. So if they have those two going forward, still the bullpen's been shaky still. That was still the big question mark. The rest of the lineup has kind of been, So I don't know. But there's more life, I think, in New York than I think I had before the Guardian series, honestly. So that's something, a positive. If you're a Yankee fan.
It's definitely big for baseball that their ALCS is between the two best teams all year.
Plus, I mean, you know, Yankees, Astros, that's good. That's good television for anybody. I think a lot of people are going to hate watch that series, honestly. Probably wish that both teams lose somehow, I'm sure, for a lot of the population in America.
Just be polarizing. That's all you have to do.
Exactly. You will have a lot of people spite watching those games, hoping someone loses so they can laugh at the other one.
Yeah.
But for the NLCS, this is beautiful for them. Like, two superstars, both battling each other, came the same draft class, high expectations, expect to be Hall of Fame baseball players, facing each other for a chance to go to the World Series, man. That's awesome. That's, like, beautiful for the game right now, that they can really take advantage of this right now. One of those two studs are going to be playing in their first World Series and have a damn good chance of winning their first World Series.
Are you talking about Machado?
Yeah.
Machado's been to the World Series.
Yeah, but as the guy.
No, you're right. He wasn't the guy with the Dodgers.
Like, the guy right now.
Yeah, my question was going to be, who's more dangerous in the NLCS and why?
Feels like the Padres.
I think the Padres, with what we've seen
pitching
in the back end of their pitching.
Hader figuring it out is huge.
It's enormous.
Like, that was the biggest thing where, like, if Hader can figure it out, like, that's going to be a really tough ball club to get out. And he looks back to what he was before the Brewers were starting to think about trading him, where he had that couple months where, like, he forgot how to pitch, but he looks like Hader again, and that's scary. So the Phillies still have some stuff to figure out in the back end, but, like, with Wheeler and Nola, like, you can get two games out of, like, some really good starting pitching here. This will be fun. Like, it's going to be awesome. I'm so excited for the NLCS. Game one's tonight, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
For me, I like Machado, Soto, and Bell more than I like Harper and Schwarber.
Hoskins, he started to figure out towards the end of the Braves series, so that's huge. If they can get that going. Get those three guys hitting all at the same time. This is gonna be damn good baseball. I'm so excited for the NLCS. Two of my favorite players in the league. I'm glad they're both, like, winning and succeeding and have a chance to, like, really, really win some baseball games here, some serious baseball. And, like, Soto's starting to find some life. Like, this is it. This is awesome.
Yeah, It is.
I don't know how appealing this is to the layman or like the average fan, the person who doesn't really know any of these baseball players or like these teams really. I think Philly, like if you don't watch baseball a year, but the Phillies are moving, like you're a diehard Phillies fan. You know what I mean? But I don't know about the Padres and the Phillies from like anyone else outside of those cities.
I mean, we talked about this before.
Well, you wanted Yankees and Dodgers
for right. the biggest markets and sort of the credibility of those franchises. But outside of them, I think the Astros situation is interesting enough to draw people.
If they win another one, what are we going to do? What's everyone going to do now?
Well, I mean, if they're totally clean, I think you
got to...
Nobody's
totally clean. Not in baseball.
I mean, if they don't get in trouble for
there
any
you go. If they don't get caught doing something, yeah. Yeah. Everybody's doing something, man.
Yeah.
Especially, but, like I said, the margin of error is so thin, you'd be an idiot to not do something. You know what I mean? You'd be dumb not to try something.
Yeah. No. It's just weird that we're at, you know, mid to late October and the Dodgers, yet again, are not playing anymore. And it's a dynasty of one, which is just
not
ridiculous.
A dynasty.
Well, I mean, it's a World Series championship.
They got a ring, which is awesome. That's what you want. That's what you do. But, I mean, it's hard to, like, repeatedly, like, sustain success in baseball. It really is very hard. You have a team that can win 100 games, and the next year they stink. Like, things that just happen in baseball. It is very, like, a very, like, now-in-the-moment kind of, like, sport. It's hard to sustain, like, what the Yankees did for those, like, when we were growing up. Like, it's insane to think about a team doing that right now.
Yeah, what was that, 96 to 98?
Yeah, but, like that's hard to fathom that they were that good, that successful, like, through the regular season, but then in the postseason making runs. Like, we're seeing the Dodgers, they're just dominating the regular season, but it's not going to anything when it matters. Baseball is hard to win in. Like, I think, you know, like, people want to call the Dodgers failures, but I mean, it's very hard to win 100 ball games and do what they did. It's very difficult to do. They had a hell of a year. Sometimes it's just not your year, man. Think of the Mets. The Mets had a hell of a year. Like, it's funny to make fun of them because they're the New York Mets, but like, they had a hell of a season. The Braves, same thing. Like, defending champions, like, they had a hell of a year. But they lost, so people are going to make fun of them and say they're losers.
Yeah, only one of 30 is left standing.
Yep. Only one team wins it every year, folks.
Yeah. Well, that is Tom Shiflett. I am Chris Miller. Thank you for tuning in.
It's over. It's over.
Y'all take it easy. I'm out.